Hey, listeners, welcome back to the Millennial Movie Mix. I am one of your hosts, Justin, and with me, as always, is
Sarah,
Ashley,
and Kristen.
That's right. We're your snowflakes, and you clicked here so you know that we're talking about Bound from 1996. Rated R.
I can see again.
I can see again. I wrote that down, too. That's brilliant. This is a Sisters Wachowski film. Mm-hmm. They are responsible for The Matrix trilogy.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
And a television show on Netflix called Sense8.
Ah.
Have you ever heard of Sense8?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is a out there show. It's like every episode is a music video. It's very sensory. It's about people who are connected and can share in one another's lives by like mental teleportation.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It's something. But Bound is their very first film that they directed.
That's awesome. I think they did a really good job.
Yeah, they wrote and directed it. And put it out there. Spent $6 million on it. And, hey, worldwide, it made $7
million. Oh, shit.
But it did become a cult classic. Most notably in the LGBT community.
Yeah, I'm sure it made more money outside the theater.
Maybe, yeah. Video sales, and it definitely did a lot to showcase the acting abilities of Jennifer Tilly and Gina Gershon and Joe Pantoliano.
They were phenomenal, all of them.
Oh, yeah.
The film itself, just the way that it was shot so meticulously, I don't know, things like the colors that were in the closet. Or Violet is wearing a red dress, but every item in her closet is gray or white or black.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then her lipstick. I mean, they really paid attention to every detail. And at like all of the movies that we've been watching for everything, I sat down to watch this one and I was like, I'm watching a movie. Like, this is like a film.
Mm-hmm.
It was in like... You know, we've got it in our sex category, but like talk about drama, like
yeah,
it was really suspenseful, and I found that I was really like into watching it. I was, you know, I was kind of on the edge of my seat a little bit.
I'm so glad, you know, I'm thinking like, okay, I put it in this sex category because way back in 1996, this was a controversial film.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been, yeah.
And women actresses, I guess, didn't want to really be in this role. I read something about Linda Hamilton dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Of a part. And originally, like, Jennifer Tilly was going to be Corky.
Yep.
It was
really?
Like, yeah. And so then both of these ladies signed on. And just, we kind of talked about in Wild Things about how there is a taking... a mastery of your own body. They just decided to go full out in the film, and they didn't think about what it would do for career. They didn't think about, we're doing this lesbian film and what's everyone and the controversy around it. They just did for her film. And so I was thinking, you know, we have it here, and it feels so crass to just say, yeah, Bound is in the sex category, because this is not just a sex movie.
No, I found that the sex scenes were super like natural to the movie. Like, I don't feel like they
super were... erotic and cool though.
Yes, definitely. But I don't feel like they stood out as like, this is what this movie is about.
Yeah.
It's just a natural part of the progression of their really intense relationship.
Yeah. They had a nice balance. And I think, you know, and I did some reading, and we sat down and watched like a 12-minute clip, because they did a director commentary for this movie, and I read that it was one of the very first director commentaries, and they did it for a laser disc release of the movie, not even a DVD.
Oh my god!
Because this was like 1996.
Oh,
so we watched, Kristen and I watched a 12-minute clip of the Wachowskis and Joey Pantoliano and Susie Bright, who was the sexual, like,
consultant.
She mm-hmm. is a lesbian, and she was brought on set to talk about the realities of what would happen. And she was like, hey, can I be your sex coordinator? Like, can I be the one who, like, choreographs the scenes and makes it all believable and all of those kinds of things? And they were like, yeah, sure, go ahead.
I think this movie needed that, because I don't know about you guys, but, like, to me, it seemed like a natural, like, women in love, like, sex scene, and not like a male fantasy, like, version of like a women loving women sex right. scene.
Like, it felt real.
Yeah, I agree, totally real. And when we get to that part in the movie, I'm sure we can dissect this this sex scene a little bit more. Oh, yeah. Hey, I threw out there Jennifer Tilly and Gina Gershon and Joe mm-hmm. Pantoliano. Do you guys know them from any other movies?
Liar, Liar for Jennifer Tilly.
Yeah.
And Celia from Monsters, Inc.
Yes.
As soon as I heard her voice, I was like, Pookie Bear.
You about to see Pookie Bear in a whole other way.
Oh, God.
One of them.
Yeah, she's in Bride of Chucky mm-hmm. and Seed of Chucky.
Stuart Little, Haunted Mansion.
Yes, yes.
And then which woman was it that played Corky?
Gina Gershon. She is the voice of Catwoman in one of the Batman animated TV series.
Huh.
She is in a movie called Face Off that is a glorious science fiction film.
Oh, she is.
With Don Travolta and Nick Cage.
Yeah. Yeah. I see those two.
She's also in, I think we added a movie in for later that we're going to cover, and she also stars in that movie. So we'll drop that a little bit later. If anyone's listening to this, they know what movie I'm talking about, but you two haven't seen it, so.
Mm.
We still have three more films after this for our sex category, I believe. So we'll have to see where Gina Gershon pops up in the next three films. But she is there. And then Joey Pants is a bad guy in The Matrix.
Yes.
That's where I know him from.
Yeah, me too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Cypher.
Okay. All right. So before we talk about the actual movie, we always go through nostalgia to see if we've seen it before or what feelings we have for it. And then we cover our triggers. So mm-hmm. I know that nobody had seen this movie except for me.
Right.
So I don't think there's any nostalgia that you guys have.
Not really. No. This wasn't like a movie that had like brands in it or like those kinds of things to kind of trigger that time.
It's pretty timeless, actually.
Yeah, it was very timeless. There was nothing really about it that didn't transfer well to today.
Maybe they even had cell phones. They just like, there's all black, older models. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
The only nostalgia for me was just the voice of Celia from Monsters, Inc.
Yeah. And then and then watching the rest of the movie and seeing what unfolds as
I will say that this was like the manifestation of like Jennifer Tilly. This is what I thought about the movie, not as a nostalgia, but kind of like a thought that I had. It was like, she's always been like this. She's got that sexy voice, that little bombshell, and that mm-hmm. the bombshell look and the makeup and all of that. And I feel like this movie was just like perfect for her, like spot yeah. on, and she played it amazingly well.
Oh yeah,
I do agree. I think that you look at what encapsulates Jennifer Tilly, and I think the role of Violet kind of does that. I mm-hmm. think that's why she plays it so well.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that it was originally supposed to be that she was going to be Corky.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's insane.
Does it even compute to me? Because, I mean, why would she not be Violet?
I don't know. It wasn't Linda Hamilton was going to be Violet. This was supposed to be like a Linda Hamilton, yeah. Jennifer Tilly hookup movie. I don't know if...
It wouldn't have worked out quite the same.
Sarah Connor. Okay. As for nostalgia for me, of course, it was like, I remember watching the movie. I don't know that I saw it right when it came out. But there was one point in time where I tried to watch everything that Jennifer Tilly was in. Because I like Jennifer Tilly. I like the way she sounds. I like the way that she delivers her lines. She reminds me of Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And also the thing that she's not dumb.
She's very smart.
She's really smart, and she executes her acting in such a way that it's believable, but it's not cheesy.
Right, it's very natural and like fluid.
Mm-hmm. And so I really like Jennifer Tilly. She pops up in a lot of movies. One of my favorite, House Arrest. She plays someone who gets kidnapped and thrown into a basement by children. It's great.
Oh my gosh.
It's great. Well, it's one day we'll have to do House Arrest.
I'm sorry, House Arrest. Is that the one where there's like a Nick Cage outburst?
No.
I'm thinking of something different. Never mind.
All right, Ashley.
Ashley's brain is gone.
Do you have some triggers for us?
I do have triggers. So we've got bondage. Clogged drains. Sex scenes, violence, torture, possessive or abusive relationships, gangs or the mafia, theft, guns, murder, homophobia with homophobic slurs, smoking, and alcohol use.
Bondage, do you mean like not sex bondage?
Just like being tied up. Like
being constrained. No, I mean,
like, one of the first shots is of Gina Gershon, yeah, Porky being bound, and like she's gagged, she's got bruises, like bound that way.
Like, yeah.
Like, I hear the word bondage.
Like unwilling.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we'll have to see where we go. I mean, our last movie was a full snowflake movie. Just yes, it was. Yes. We didn't click on that wild podcast. Make sure to check out Wild Things. So we'll see if Bound did better, what Wild Things just fucking sucked at.
Let's break it down. Corky, a lesbian and ex-con, is hired as a renovator at an apartment building. Upon entering the building, she encounters Violet and Caesar, the couple who live next door to the apartment she's renovating. Later, while Caesar is gone, Violet deliberately drops an earring down the sink, and the building owner sends Corky to retrieve it. Violet admits that she dropped the earring on purpose in order to seduce Corky. They are interrupted by Caesar's arrival, and Corky returns to work at the apartment. When she leaves for the day, Violet follows Corky to her truck. They go to Corky's apartment, where they have passionate sex. The next morning, as the two talk, Violet tells Corky that Caesar is a money launderer for the mafia, and they have been together for 5 years.
Okay. A lot to unpack there.
Oh my god, yes. I was just thinking. Lots.
So, this isn't the first thing that happens in the movie, but this is the first thing I want to say is, so Corky unclogs the drain for Violet and then fingers her. Wash your hands in between any sexual contact, people.
You hear like a little rinse to her hands and, oh, it's clean.
There wasn't a lot of dirt there.
Oh, so much.
There always was just, like, pipe dirt.
Okay, that's all. That was
yeah, that should not go.
Okay, my first thing that I was going to say is how much I love the dance between Corky and Violet that starts from the elevator and ends until Violet puts her hand on her breast. Like the tension, game of it. I fucking love Corky's smile. And when she starts to be like, okay, yeah, like I'm gonna be in on that. I know what you're doing. Like, you know, like Violet closes the door behind her and she's like, and then she says later, you set this all up, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my gosh.
It was her master plan.
It was.
After they cut away from the scene where they're like bound up, I was like, oh, that's what this movie is. Like, as soon as that scene started, and it was, I was like, oh, I think this will be really fun.
When you saw her tied up, you're like, oh, this is profound.
No, maybe, oh, no.
Thirsty, maybe.
Yeah, oh, my God. I wrote, yeah, did it make you thirsty, maybe?
No, it was like, as soon as the elevator scene started, I was like, oh, hi. Hi, both of you.
I know, like, Violet, you have this dichotomy, I guess, of the women. Like, Violet walks in, and she is very prim and proper.
Like, you're high femme.
Very femme, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you have Corky, who is tattooed, and you get all of these shots of Corky's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sexy hands.
It's the sexy hands. And you get the laborious tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's like anti-men, women's society. That's what it stands for.
I love it.
And
I need a laborious.
You need a laborious. That's right. That is your weapon of choice. And I love, Violet just says, okay. Violet says, beautiful laborious. And, and you're like, oh.
Ooh.
Thirsty, maybe?
A little bit. There's a sexy noir music playing in the background.
Yes. And you're like, this, like, you're watching this in 1996 and people don't fucking talk about this. And then you, like, in this legit film, you've got this cat and mouse between these two women. And you're thinking, okay, like, do we trust Violet?
I had that thought too. Because I had not seen the movie and I was like, what's going on here? Is she setting stuff up or... But, I mean, that didn't...
Because we're all being blinded by, oh, look, girlies, they're going to kiss. And you're not thinking about, okay, no movie. You're watching a fucking movie here. What's Violet doing?
Yeah.
I thought that Violet, like, right off the bat, I was like, she's a sex worker, but she's gay. And, like, she has to be with Caesar because that's work, but she wants to be with Corky because that's play.
Yeah.
And then she revealed... to Corky, you know, like, oh, he's been laundering money for the mafia for 5 years that I know of. I'm like, okay, she wants out, so this is like, this is gonna blossom into something else here.
Right.
Well, it's, she's probably wanted out the whole time because I can just imagine that she's working and she's thinking about, where am I going to sleep tonight? What kind of a future do I have?
Yeah, it was more about security.
Exactly, yeah. It was security. And mm-hmm. then it's become less and less secure for her, and she can't take it.
Mm-hmm.
And here you have Corky, and I don't know if Corky's opportunity, I mean, she says later that she's been seen in a bar with another woman. You know, it just, she saw Corky, and there was a spark.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get that scene between Caesar and Corky when it's revealed that Corky has been, she's been in jail, in prison before.
Right.
And then I think that's when Violet's like, oh, well, that's when she wants to start using her to get money.
Maybe. I didn't think about that.
I mean, Caesar's a fucking asshole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is.
They had already started, like, fucking around before that, though. I think that she was like, oh, well, like, I like her and maybe she can help me now.
Yeah. I mean, I, right, without thinking about what skills do you have to even do this. Or mm-hmm. I don't know. I think she maybe was just wanting to have the fun. And then mm-hmm. it, like, opened into an opportunity.
Yeah, it was like as they talked.
Well, especially since it became more. Because I think that what we're supposed to see is that Corky is a player.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, she would have gone out to that bar, picked up a girl, done what she needed to do, and then gone about her day. And she did that after she saw Violet, because Violet intrigued her. We know that Violet does sex work with dudes and then goes and she has whatever girl she wants. So then we're watching this movie and we're seeing that this is the moment in both of these women's lives where when they meet on that elevator, this is not just sex. Like, they have an awesome sex scene that's like crane aerial shot, and like they did it in one shot, like 8 times it took them to do it, but they did it in one shot, no cuts in that sex scene.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And like I heard it was supposed to be like a closed set, but like normally for sex scenes it's a closed set, but they had to move walls and do so much stuff to get that one continuous shot that there were like dozens of people there.
Yeah.
Oh geez.
One of those things that maybe would not happen on a set today.
Yeah. Oh, probably not.
Like, they would have found some way around it today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like the technology is a little bit better and smaller, so like maybe that would have helped. I don't know.
All right, so then we're talking about the build-up between Corky and Violet. And we're watching this tension build. And you three who have never seen the movie before, it kind of gets into it pretty quickly. Like, Violet's over there with the coffee, and then she calls her over, and then all of a sudden Corky's hands are places. And then they're having this sex scene. And then the rest of the movie is like this heist movie.
Right. Yeah, it takes a different turn than what you're expecting after those first few minutes.
Yeah, it was very unexpected it happening that quickly.
Well, so when the movie starts and you're seeing this cat and mouse, what did you think the movie was going to be about?
I was confused. I was like, okay, so we're going to eventually circle back to how we got here. And then they kind of dropped the line of, oh, you know, I was in jail. I was like, oh, is it something because like she was in jail? Or, and then Violet started talking about like the money laundering, and I was like, it's got to be something with that. I don't know, something went wrong.
Right. Well, when they started talking about them being in or her being in jail, that's when I kind of figured, I was like, okay, well, they're gonna get money somehow and then escape together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't really know either, but I was thinking like that they were gonna have a relationship and then get caught by Caesar.
Mm.
Like, because one of the beginning images you get is Corky tied up, and so like, you know something bad happens.
Right. Well, and you know he's in the mafia too, so you're like, oh shit.
And he does have that reaction when he comes into the dark room.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck's going on?
Violet, when she took her time putting like her sweater on and everything. Like, you're lucky that he like had his back turned for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. In the shot. They really were not thinking about that.
And like, the furthest thing from his mind is that they were doing what they were doing.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe, I don't know.
Yes, he was.
If I walked in on something like that, I'd be like, oh, I am so sorry.
I don't think it crosses his mind, and then that's his ego.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes into, I don't know what it is, in impress mode. Like, he sees this person, and I don't know that he's seen Corky as a lesbian. Like, he's not even seeing Corky.
No, he's just seeing like a worker, a peon of the mob.
Who he gives like what, $40 to? I don't even know how much money.
I don't know.
She's like butch though.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, it's like it's pretty obvious, I guess you would say.
Yeah,
right. You're judging a book by its cover, but like, he just is so blinded by how great he thinks he is.
Exactly.
That it doesn't occur to him at all.
So we've got great establishing of characters. We get the setup right away for mob and hidden romance and heisty type. I mean, I don't know if in the first moments, like if Violet comes to Corky about doing a heist yet. I don't know if that starts right away.
I think they just talk about
the laundering.
Going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, about the laundering. But you've got a, I mean, going through and watching the film, it doesn't seem like it is moving slowly at all. Even though there's not a lot of action right away, it's such an intriguing viewing.
Mm-hmm. And you're getting a lot of information still, I think, like, because you're having to process everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I do want to talk about the lesbian bar scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because we talked about Susie Bright, who was a sex consultant on the film. Mm-hmm. She was in this scene. She was the girl, Jessie, who Corky tries to talk to. And then the cop girlfriend comes over and is like, what's going on, Jessie? And she got to bring her own friends to be in that shot. She was very concerned that they were going to have Hollywood lesbian types.
Well, like non-lesbians trying to be lesbians.
Exactly.
What they were worried about.
So, like, what would be Hollywood's perception of what a lesbian looks like?
Right.
And she's like, I want to bring authentic lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, sure, go ahead, bring them.
I'm so glad that they, like, she was given the license to do that, because it would have been just as easy for them to say no and, like, not have that representation. But I'm glad.
Yeah, it's totally believable. Yeah. I mean, I don't see that out of the Wachowskis.
Well, no.
You know, with the kind of people who they are and what they've advocated for in their lives, I'm totally seeing how accepting and how open they were to the representation of this relationship, and then to not even have it really be about the relationship, to have it be about the heist and about the characters.
Right. And to just showcase the relationship as
a thing
in the movie. I mean, a natural thing.
And, I guess that they were told at one time that they could very easily sell the movie if they just made Corky a dude and not a female.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, no, that movie's already been done before.
Yeah.
A million times.
Yeah. So they're like, no, Corky has to be a female.
Well, good.
And then they contacted Susie Bright, and they were like, do you want to come be an extra in our movie? And she was like, I'll do more than that. How about I help with this too? And it was just all very, you know, yeah, we'll do this. Very fortuitous, exactly. Yeah. That they were able to present everything so awesomely. And then you end up with a very respectful, like, almost old school, like, what would you call it, like a noir?
Yeah, that's totally the vibe that I got from it, like, the whole time with, like, the whole beginning of the movie, very noir.
And that's the thing, like, Wild Thing do that.
I didn't get
that. And they failed. All,
really. I thought with Wild Things, with the cheesy music and the twists and the turns.
Well, I mean, that aspect of it, yes. But this Bound kind of, like, put it right in your face with the noir.
Well, exactly. Because of the cinematography and the set design. And the colors that they chose, they popped. And the people who they chose to wear colors, like Only Violet.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is very gray or black or whatever.
Exactly. And so even like the alcohol that they're using, the shots of alcohol dropping, or the blood when it spills on a tile. Like, they were paying attention to how every shot, like a short story almost, because you only have so much time and so many words. Everything you add in should mean something. Nothing should be extraneous. So you're, like, assaulting the viewer's eyes. And everything in this film was so intriguing and very soothing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Even the violence.
Yeah, it seemed to all flow super naturally. Like, it just, like, I don't know, none of it seemed overwhelming.
And even in the, I think in the next section, we'll talk about violence through the walls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that we kind of feel like the noir out of this movie and not necessarily Wild Things is, like, there are a lot of, I don't know, this movie is, like, overall pretty, like, dark, except for, you know, the happy ending. And there's, like, so much consequence for every action that each of these characters, you know, make or like takes.
Yeah.
But the Wild Things, it was just like all a selfish, like get rich quick kind of a thing. And this was like get out and have a better life.
Right.
Exactly. I also think that Wild Things, like, they asked you to believe a lot about the characters without showing mm-hmm. you or making you believe it. And yeah. In this movie, I was invested. I felt Corky and Violet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I know it's way later when Violet gives her sex worker talk. But that is like, and that's so visceral in her delivery and like the numbness that she would have talking about it. Like, most people would be like, oh, overact that shit. You need to cry. And I'd be like, you know how many fucking times you think she's goddamn cried already?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or, like, it's nothing new to her that she does the sex work.
Exactly.
So. Yeah. And I feel like this is a story of a lot of people. And it just makes it that much, like, you know, sadder, but, like, more relatable, too.
Yeah. Because, like, you feel so bad for Violet. When she starts realizing that everything that's happening now is because of her.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we'll get to that later, but yeah, I totally get what you're saying.
Later, Violet overhears Caesar and his mob associates beating and torturing Shelley, a man who has been skimming money from the business. Upset by the violence, Violet seeks solace from Corky. She tells Corky that she wants to make a new life for herself, but that she needs Corky's help. Knowing that Caesar will bring the $2 million that Shelley embezzled back to the apartment, the two women start planning to steal the money. After Shelley is shot and killed by Johnny, the son of mafia boss Gino Marzoni, Caesar returns to the apartment with a bag of bloody money. While angry at Johnny for killing Shelley in a fit of rage and splattering blood everywhere, Caesar proceeds to wash, iron, and hang the money to dry.
So when they're doing the scene and they're cutting off Shelly's fingers, my gut dropped into my fucking asshole. Oh my God, it made me feel sick.
That was horrible.
Yeah.
But do you know what my note was, Ashley?
What?
It's not eyes.
It's not eyes, thank God. It's not eyes.
It's not, no, it's the fingers.
Just like, they're just bashing his face into the toilet.
Oh my God.
Oh God.
That was horrible. That
transition, though. And, like, you knew something terrible was happening, and you had that voyeur thing of hearing it through the wall and hearing it through the toilet, and then all of a sudden you are in the other bathroom. Mm-hmm. And right. then it's the blood drip.
It's yeah. like, I don't want to, like, it sounds awful. You just know that Corky is feeling, I don't want to know what is going on in there. And I didn't want to know what was going on in there. And then they showed us and it was like, oh, mm-hmm. fuck.
Yeah, but that transition really prepares you for it, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to ask you 10 times. Oh, ask you 10 questions.
Ooh.
That's fucking... And the way that guy sits on his back and holds him down.
Yeah.
And you have the feeling of, like, what could you fucking do? No matter how big you are, strong you are, you have three people in that room, one sitting on you. You're already bound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's helpless.
Helpless.
Like, making me cringe just thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, well, what the fuck were you doing, Shelley? You had over $2 million.
And you didn't just leave.
What the fuck were you doing?
Right.
And we never know how he got the $2 million.
Nope.
We don't know why he didn't leave. He even showed up to talk to Violet and then still didn't fucking leave after that.
Right.
So I'm like, what?
Yeah, just dumb.
And like, poor Violet just having to like sit there.
Oh, I know. That's when you really get... Okay, so we have some more characters introduced in this section. You've got Johnny, who is Johnny Marzoni, the asshole who's beating up Shelley. And then you've got Mickey. And Mickey... I love the power that Mickey has over Caesar in this scene. Mm-hmm. Where Caesar is obviously, he's fucking sadistic. Mm-hmm. He wants Violet to stay. For what reason do you think?
To make him feel more powerful.
Yeah.
Right, to possess her.
She knows that he's part of this powerful group. And, like, it makes him feel like more of a man and a powerful man.
That's just awful.
And it's like she can't leave because she knows too much if she's there.
And I'm thinking, like, is he thinking, like, if she leaves, this really is a bad thing. So I'm then doing a bad thing too. But if she stays, it's okay. But, like, it really is a strange power possession. Like,
yeah, cause it's like control over her too.
Yeah. But then Mickey swoops in and he's like, you don't need to be here. Yeah. You need to leave. And there's nothing that Caesar can do about it.
Right. I love that.
I loved it so much.
And I love the relationship here between Violet and Mickey. Mm-hmm. I don't so much like it in the end of the movie.
No. Yeah.
No.
But we'll get to later.
Yeah.
But I like it here in that Mickey looks at her. But here's my thing. And even as I'm saying it, everyone in this movie looks at Violet and they covet her. Mm-hmm. They want to protect her. They see her as delicate or dumb. Mm-hmm. Even Corky has her moments.
Right.
And I just think that, like, that is a horrible thing, but then it completely works to Violet's advantage.
And mm-hmm. I felt a lot of, like, Jennifer Tilly in this, too, because mm-hmm. she's got to have been, like, feeling a lot of this herself, because she naturally has that voice and that look, that aesthetic, where, you know, she's not going to be taken seriously because people do think of her as being like a sex pot or yeah. you know, whatever. And so I feel like she probably really connected with this role.
Well, it's funny you say voice, because she changes her voice when she's talking to dudes and when she's talking to Corky. Mm-hmm. When she talks to characters like Mickey, she's high-pitched, whispering. Mm-hmm. When she's talking to Corky, she's using like a
voice.
Richer voice.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think women do. And like we've heard this talked about before, about women who are trying to make men feel big and not threatened will make sure that their voices are high-pitched and sweet. And so that they appear demure and subservient, right?
Yes.
And we think, oh well, I mean, this woman is being like oppressed, and she is. But then you also see the power that is in that, and like men are just so fucking dumb and brittle that they're like, oh, you talk to me in this soft way, and I feel like I own the world.
I feel like I own you.
I feel like I own you. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Ugh. It's like sickening to see that and like feel that just like play out in the world. It sucks.
And I think that's why you automatically are on Violet's side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you're immediately rooting for her. Mm-hmm. For them.
And then they do the things to show you that Caesar is a bad guy. It's more than just being a dude who is caught up in something that he ends up making choices. He ends up showing that he is a bad person.
Right. Yeah. It's not just like at first it's like, oh, is this the stress of what's happening? Yeah. You kind of would probably snap a little bit, but then you really see the depth of those choices.
Right.
Like, you see in those moments that like he could have made other choices.
Mm-hmm.
He always just made the wrong choice. Like every time he would make a choice, it'd be like, God dang it, stop it.
Well, then like later on, like it makes the wrong choices that are so frustrating for the audience too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
In this section, when he busts in with that thing of money that's all bloodied, and then you start actually thinking about a money launderer, and you're like, wait.
I know.
Like, wait a minute.
Uh-huh.
Is this what that's not what a launderer does. But then you're like, but now you're actually laundering the money. But like laundrying the money.
That cracked me up. Just think, like when I saw it, I was like, oh my God. But yeah, you're right, Sarah. He like Caesar just made himself completely irredeemable.
Yes.
Except that's what I'm saying though. He fucking cleaned that money like no fucking other.
Yeah, he did.
Right?
He had to make
like
it
that.
Perfect.
That's the only thing that he did well in this movie.
If he can
did
do
you
one
see the
thing.
Money we walked in, and then did you see the money when they stole it?
Like, yeah, they did a really
like,
good
damn,
job.
Like, damn, Caesar. So we have the relationship between Johnny and Caesar that's set up here. We have the Mickey relationship between Mickey Caesar and Mickey and Violet that's set up here. And you have the moment where Corky wants to see the money. And so she's already in the house when Caesar brings the money in.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets to see it, and then the plan is on.
As they plan, Violet explains to Corky that Caesar and Johnny hate each other, and that Gino and Johnny will be coming to pick the money up from Caesar. Corky devises a plan. When Caesar has finished counting the money, he will shower to unwind. While he does, Violet will purposefully drop a bottle of Glenlivet scotch that Gino prefers and tell Caesar that she's going to buy more. As she leaves the apartment, Corky will enter, steal the money from the briefcase, and leave. Violet will then return with the scotch and tell Caesar that she just saw Johnny leave. Suspicious, Caesar will check the briefcase, find the money gone, and assume that Johnny has taken it. Corky and Violet think Caesar will be forced to flee because Gino will assume that he has been robbed by Caesar, not his son Johnny.
It was a good plan.
Yeah.
That was a really good plan.
It was.
Fucking Caesar.
Yeah. Overthinking.
Yeah. How cool were Corky's earrings?
Super fucking cool.
Oh my gosh, I did write that. I want a set of those. I
want
to learn how to do that.
I do. I want to pick locks.
Yeah, I want to be a criminal.
It seems like tons of people. Yes. I'm glad that you have aspirations. It seemed like tons of people in this movie had like awesome skills that like good life skills. Like even fucking Mickey picks a lock and gets in later.
Right.
Yeah. They're just all like pretty street smart.
But I love that. And it's like, what a good idea to put the pieces to your lock picking on your ears.
Yeah. And then,
right, and then
like,
it's just stylish.
You don't have anything like in your pocket to be suspicious about or whatever.
And your hands are free. Like, and
it looks like, awesome.
And that's like a lesbian fashion trend too, like especially in the 90s.
Oh yeah.
But like, it was just really clever. Like, for, I don't know, I just feel like it was clever for them to write that, but like also just for her to like do that.
Because it fit on so many levels of cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
She pops in and opens up the case, and they're gonna put the newspapers in. And
I was terrified.
I was too.
That she was going to get caught.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, I wrote a note that, like, the whole time they're executing this plan, my heart's pounding this whole time.
Oh, yeah.
I was,
and
like,
that doesn't usually happen to me with movies.
I was,
because
like,
you don't know what direction it's going to go.
Yeah, you don't.
See, I'm watching it, and I know how it ends up eventually, and I sometimes I envy getting to watch the movie for the first time.
Uh-huh.
Because I take for granted the twists and the turns.
Yeah, and like being, like having all that suspense the first time you watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, like being like, okay, what are they thinking is going to happen here?
And the ending was made just like so, like I didn't know what the ending was going to be because of the opening scene.
The moment that Caesar starts to not go on like what they planned. You're like, oh, shit. Oh,
right.
Shit.
Right.
Like, Caesar starts to think a little bit, and then...
Once he finds the money, he's gone.
Right.
Because she actually gets in and sets it up and takes it.
After 5 years of doing this, that this was the time that he would break.
And finally decide to, like, stand up and do something.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of snap.
Yeah.
Now let's take a break and hear about our sponsor. And now back to the show.
When Caesar finds the money gone, he realizes that Gina will think he stole it if he runs and decides to get the money back from Johnny. Panicking, Violet threatens to leave, but Caesar forces her to stay, suspecting that she and Johnny may have stolen the money and framed him. Corky waits next door with the money while Gino and Johnny arrive. After Johnny flirts with Violet and taunts him, Caesar pulls out a gun and tells Gino that his son stole the money. He kills Gino, Johnny, and Roy, who is Gino's bodyguard. Caesar tells Violet that they must find the money, dispose of the bodies, and pretend that Gino and Johnny never arrived, lest their mob pals discover the men are missing. Unable to find the money at Johnny's apartment, Caesar telephones Mickey, a mob buddy, to buy more time by telling him that Gino has yet to arrive.
Oh my god, okay, tell me what you thought about this scene.
I was just like in a constant state of no.
Yes.
Like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
This Why are you making these choices?
Yeah, I was like, this is not going to end well for Caesar. Like, that's just all I kept thinking.
He was so sure of himself.
Right.
He was so, he was like, you have Johnny, like, where's the key? He's like, you didn't need a key. Like, Caesar was so full of ego. He thought he was going to get Johnny. And the whole time, you see Violet's face like, oh, fuck. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. But she just stays cool as a cucumber on the outside.
And then the moment he pulls that gun on Gino,
it's over.
It's absolutely over. It no longer matters about the money.
No.
Or anything.
Mm-mm.
And everyone, you knew that he was going to shoot Gino, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was no way that he couldn't. The moment he pulled the gun, he couldn't not shoot the gun and walk out alive.
But they have that wonderful, that moment where Gino shot and he falls in slow motion.
Yeah.
As, like, everything, like, see, everything's crumbling around Caesar. The gunshot, the bullet whizzes past him.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he takes out the bodyguard. And then Johnny is just toast.
And then he slowly...
He's even armed.
No.
Or he didn't pull his weapon if he was.
He says, don't shoot.
Yeah.
I was just so worried that Violet was going to get hurt at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're actually... Because you guys haven't seen it, so you're like... Yeah, one of these people might die.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I thought for sure that one of them could have died or gotten seriously injured.
Do you guys know who played Johnny?
Christopher
Maloney. It's the guy who plays Elliot on
SVU.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was in Oz.
And he was in Oz, too.
Oh, okay. He was. Okay.
Yeah. He was also Freak Show and Harold and Kumar.
Ah.
Yeah. Oh.
So he's been around in some places.
Oh yeah.
And in this movie, he was a little violent piece of shit.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He played it well though.
He did.
Oh like, yeah.
It's interesting seeing him play the cop and then the mafia.
Yeah.
When Caesar kills him and then like picks him up and is like shaking.
Oh
him.
My god.
Oh my god, what a scene.
I wrote
is.
It down. Who's like, dead? Fuckface.
Yeah, but also, like, the acting there, like, can you imagine having somebody, like, grab you and, like, being in your face, like, scream at you, and you can't move your eyes or, like, breathe or move at all?
Right.
I mean, that was, like, a really well-acted scene, I thought.
Because then you're acting as the dead body, of course, but then, like, Caesar, the character, so Joey Pants is playing Caesar, and can you imagine, like, fucking hating someone so much? That you relish.
You taunt their dead body.
That you taunt their dead body.
That's, terrible.
That's horrible. Sickening.
Yes, disgusting.
Have you ever danced on someone's grave?
Oh my god, Ashley!
That's different. Still, that's a little macabre, but that's still different than picking up someone's fresh, not even rigor mortis corpse.
Not even rigor mortis corpse.
No, that's totally different. That's totally different.
So, yeah, I can totally see dancing on a grave. But this was Joey Pants gross acted the shit out of this movie.
Yeah, he did.
He did great. He was so easy to hate. It was he did great. Yeah.
Yes. From the moment you see him, it's like, oh.
I think that so this movie had a lot of great shots. One of my favorite shots in the film is when Violet is being dragged to Johnny's apartment and they're in the hallway outside of Corky's door and she's looking through the peephole and you see Violet being and she turns and looks and it's like, what in the fuck do you do? Like, what can Corky do? What can Violet do? They're fucking trapped in this moment.
Yeah.
And then the audience, all we can do is watch. And watch through a lens.
Knowing that neither of them are armed, nor can they overpower any of these guys.
Exactly. And now they just have their minds to get them out of here. Don't you love the days of no caller ID that Caesar can call from some dead guy's apartment and Mickey and doesn't know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So nice.
You're like, wow, 1996.
Yeah. That's the only thing that like didn't age well.
But then you're thinking caller ID wasn't big until like 97. Like legit. Because between Scream 1 and Scream 2, they got caller ID.
If you wanted to, if you wanted to be anonymous, you had to dial star 69.
One of them, one was to be anonymous, and one was to call somebody back who had just called you.
Yeah,
star 67 or star 69.
Yeah,
it was star 67 to hide it.
Star 69, their ass. Anonymous, I think.
Yeah, and then I think star 86 to call back.
Star 86.
No. It was star 67 to call out anonymous. But I think if you wanted to figure it out and call them back.
Star 69.
Right.
No, 86.
86. I never heard that.
Mm-mm, me either.
We're going to 86 that information.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't done it in like 15 years. So
I don't remember either. When I was growing up, we used to have a telephone number you could call to get your local time and temperature.
Yep. 747-1212. Local time and temp.
Do you remember calling the 411?
Oh my god, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just like the operator?
You can still call them, but they charge you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What kind of information do they give you? Like, just where?
Like, it's like looking up in a phone book. Exactly. But somebody tells you.
Or just Google it.
Yeah, just Google it now.
Jesus. Jesus. All right. All right, so we've got the big blowout death scene. And you're like, this movie's not fucking over yet. What else could possibly happen? We've got to get the movie, or we've got to get the money to these women.
Yes, and we have to find out how Corky gets tied up. So I'm like, what? Okay, I don't know. I was at a loss. I was like, I have no idea what's going to happen.
Right.
But you were intrigued.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
After discovering that Corky and Violet stole the money, Caesar ties them up, threatens to torture them, and demands to know where it is. When Mickey arrives at the apartment, Caesar makes a deal with Violet to help him stall. Violet calls their landline from Johnny's cell phone and convinces Caesar to feign a conversation with Gino, explaining that he and Johnny are in the hospital after a car accident. The ruse fools Mickey, who leaves for the hospital. Corky tells Caesar that she has hidden the money in the next door apartment and goes to retrieve it. Violet escapes and calls Mickey, telling him that Caesar stole the money and forced her to keep quiet. Corky tries to stop Caesar from taking the money, but he beats her unconscious. Violet arrives and holds Caesar at gunpoint. She informs him that Mickey is on his way and that he should run while he can. When Caesar refuses, Violet kills him.
When Violet's on the telephone with Corky and you have shots coming where he's going to be behind her.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm like, they're taking way too long on the phone.
Right.
And then I love that he's calling back, and I think, and Kristen, we're watching this together, and Kristen says, unplug the phone!
And then I did too.
Like 5 seconds later, Corky unplugs the phone.
Oh my god. I was like, leave it off the receiver. Leave it off the receiver.
But it was tension. And I had seen it before, and I knew what ended up, and still I was like, oh. So I can only imagine watching it for the first time and like having the tension of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is when you get Caesar at his, like, fucking worst.
Unhinged, yeah.
So he's already picked up the dead body. Now he says that queers make him sick.
Ugh.
And then he has slobber running down his face, and he's teeth talking, and he kisses Violet.
Blech. Blech.
Blech, blech.
So yeah, so fuck you, Caesar. And I sure am glad you got shot a bunch of times in a very awesomely shot scene of the blood on the white paint.
That was beautiful.
Letter.
By the woman that you tortured.
Well, and then tortured, and even when he has a gun on him, he couldn't fucking help himself. He pushed and pushed, and he thought he knew. Mm-hmm. He thought he knew about her better than she knew about her.
Right.
Well, and his ego went into play there. Like,
yeah.
He thought that he was going to dominate her.
And look what happened. Look who got bound to death now, bitch. That's you, Caesar. What did you think about Corky hiding the money in the paint?
I thought that was pretty smart.
Good idea, yeah.
Who's going to question the convict who, like, the, you know, rehabilitating convict carrying paint home from a job?
That's right.
Well, also, I mean, when you look into a paint bucket, you'd have to put your hand in it or something to figure out the money was in there.
Right.
I thought it was a really good idea.
You think they played it up like it was a hard decision for Corky not to leave?
I think so.
Like, she fell in love with Violet?
Or maybe in some sense, like, felt that at least, like, she could help her in some way. Maybe not, like, instant love, but, like, at least attraction
or
in some
form. Allegiance?
Yeah. Or well, that. I
mean, there's at least the morality of the thing. Like, we don't have to assume that she has no morals. Like, you know, if Violet helped her get this money and Violet's her friend.
It's $2 million.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, still, she would feel obligated probably being a person.
Well, that's
like to wait a little bit,
and it was set up that she went to prison because her last partner betrayed her.
Right,
like she couldn't trust that person, so then she wants to then be loyal and be trusted, so then she stays for Violet.
Yeah. I would like to believe that that's what it was.
And one of the things that Corky says is that if she's going to do that, she has to trust Violet completely. And so they talk, and like they make a show of like Violet being very descriptive when she's talking and like saying all the truth that she can.
Right.
Yeah. So they try to show that they've built this trust and this friendship or whatever, even if they don't end up being together, they at least got trust between them.
Right.
I'm going to piggyback off that, because I really like the way the film delivered its information and used its time.
Mm-hmm.
That it would talk to you about a plan while the plan was happening.
Right.
And you felt good about watching it because you were like, I'm not waiting on anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like, okay, talk about it and then execute, where you're basically listening to the same thing again twice. So you were getting it all at once, the plan and the execution.
And each of the scenes between Violet and Corky felt so naturally acted.
Oh yeah.
And so it was very, you had this dissonance between these awesome scenes of basically like solace of they're hidden away together. They're unveiling all of their inner thoughts and desires. They're exploring everything they want. And then you think, oh my God, the title is bound. And then the whole rest of the movie, they're trapped. And Violet's trapped. And Corky's trapped. And they cannot get out. And Violet doesn't get out until she pulls that trigger on Caesar. And then involves Mickey and gets out that way. And the whole ending is very clean. But it just, I loved the way the film was shot, the concept of the film, the use of the colors, and I think that it just naturally progressed through the film as well until you got this release at the end from being bound.
Mm-hmm.
I might be overthinking it.
No, I think all of that. I saw the same things in there.
Oh, yeah.
Later, Mickey, who believes Violet's story, tells her that he will find Caesar. Mickey suggests that he and Violet be together, but she tells him that she needs a clean break, which she makes by driving off hand in hand with Corky.
Woo woo!
Their getaway car. I was the like, brand oh new my
truck.
God.
Yeah, right.
No, my, here's another bit of nostalgia in that this, my gay aunt had a red truck for a while. I was like, oh, this is fun. Is this like a thing?
Yeah. It must be.
I don't know.
It was, I did think it was a little off character. Like, I thought she was driving the old truck because it was her thing. And then she got a little bit of money and she's like, I'm gonna get me the newest truck. But then right. I thought, like, I don't know who wouldn't. Who wouldn't get $2 million.
Yeah, and then keep the old truck because it was kind of an older, like, collectible, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Like something
or,
that
like,
she could
sentimental
fix up.
Value.
Yeah.
Maybe it was, like, too recognizable.
Maybe, because they're trying to get away.
Because, like, it seems like she's escaping parole. Or, maybe. No.
Oh, it could be, yeah.
We don't know exactly where they're escaping to. They could just be going to her apartment.
Yeah.
You know? I like that they end up with all of the money in the end.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I like, magically, I don't exactly know, and I guess I might have missed it in the summary, what they did with Caesar's body.
I just assumed that Mickey took care of all of it, because there were a lot
Mickey
of
didn't take care
there.
Of Caesar's body.
No, because they end up telling him that Caesar took Brand. Off of the money. So that they can get away with the money.
So what did Corky and Violet do with Caesar's body?
They ate him.
Paint bucket?
They ate him.
They ate him. That's right, it's a whole spin on this movie. Bound Appetit. The sequel we found. I'm glad you laughed. I didn't land with the 95ers.
That's okay. I made a really bad dad joke at work and nobody laughed.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm totally used to it. All right, so I want to talk about Mickey. I want to talk about whether or not Mickey ever suspected Violet, if he just didn't care.
Of course.
And I want to talk about how Violet takes advantage of Mickey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she uses her, like, what people think of her to her advantage. Like, so she... Like, she puts off this air of, like, innocence and also, like, not stupidity, but just, like, not, like, being super smart. Like, that's just, like, what
not being
people,
strong.
Yeah, what people perceive her as just because of her appearance and the way that she sounds. And so she used that to her advantage in this situation with Mickey. Yeah.
And, like, I can't think of another way that they could have gotten such a clean getaway without people looking for her.
Right.
And, like without involving the police and the body recovery and things like that.
Yeah, and she knew that he wouldn't. And so when she's like, oh, we should call the police. It's all, like, reverse psychology. It's all, I'm reaffirming, you know.
Yeah.
When she calls him in the elevator and switches from being normal to crying. And it's like,
that was great.
Yeah. Because you don't get a lot of, like, you almost want, like, Violet the younger years to see, like, all of the things that Violet is actually capable of. Because even throughout the film, when she's terrified and she's scared, when she's saying things, she still survives. She still makes it through. And you know that there's just this brain inside of her and this drive that's going to make sure that she gets what she wants. And when she leans in to kiss Mickey at the end, she's cementing that. Mm-hmm. She's making sure. I mean, she's playing the part. And she's making sure that she's going to get what she needs. And she's sealing the deal.
Mm-hmm.
But then I guess she's only able to do that because Mickey only looks at her in a certain way.
Yeah, and I think it's very well implied, especially by, I don't know the actor's name, but by the way the actor acts this moment, that Mickey's probably always had a thing for Violet, which probably a lot of guys around her would mm-hmm. have, but, you know, he offers, you know, to basically
take her in.
Like, yeah. So, like, he's had his eye on her.
So then we don't think at the end, Mickey never suspected.
No, I don't think so.
So then after she kisses and he has that linger and then gets in his car, that linger is just like, oh, I just had a kiss from her. I wish I could have more.
Yeah, it's just like a longing sort of like, I'll never have it.
Oh.
Sort of thing.
I would think that he was thinking that the minute she actually showed interest or did something like that, he'd immediately be like, well, why? Caesar was like, oh, how could a woman like Violet be interested in me? He thought of himself as not what he actually was. But someone like Mickey would be, he looked at Violet as something that was to be admired, something that he was not going to have. So then the minute that she was like kissing him.
See, like I took that linger as like him considering all that she's been through. And like figuring it out, like, yeah, this little like delicate flower probably does need a clean getaway.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe Mickey's like glass wasn't broken on her. He still sees her as something delicate and something to be protected. And
that's what I thought, because I thought it was more of like it was a goodbye kiss that like he.
A goodbye kiss like on the cheek.
Well,
yeah, right?
But
she went lips.
She did go lips. That was her manipulating him.
I know.
But he just like sees her as that, like as this delicate lady.
I don't know. I didn't really like that Violet was doing that to Mickey. But then it got me thinking about the way that Mickey's always treated Violet and the way that he had a limited viewpoint of Violet. No matter how nice he was, mm-hmm. he still put her in a box.
Yeah, he just immediately wanted her to jump from Caesar right onto him.
Yeah. So I was like, damn, movie.
Yeah.
But it's okay, because Corky got a truck. Beep, beep. So, I mean, that's bound.
Yeah.
That was a pretty tight podcast.
Yeah.
All that's left now are... Jesus, I've got to think of a connection to Buffy.
Not as easy as last time.
Man.
We need our snowflakes.
And we need our snowflake ratings and then our recommendations. Mm-hmm. Snowflake ratings, let's go.
I give it 2.
2?
Yes. It's got some triggers. Definitely thankful for some change.
What are your hold-up triggers for your ratings?
The homophobia and the, like, torture and the abusive relationship.
Yeah, the fingers, like I said, gut and asshole.
Oh, and don't forget about that clogged drain.
Oh, God.
You didn't think the dripping water was sensual?
No.
No, not that drain. The drain that Corky unclogs at the very beginning of this movie.
Oh, okay.
The tub. I don't know if you've ever used a Roto-Rooter. It's nasty.
I do want to note, though, that, you know, so triggering homophobia. I do like in this movie, which I think was lacking in others, that there was a closure. Like almost like a lesson, like the dude who made the comment about queers making him sick, he was a fuck nugget and he got killed,
right? Mm-hmm.
The alphabet has come for you.
And then you have your beautiful lesbian lover relationship that gets to drive off into the distance in an awesome truck with millions of dollars.
Right.
Obviously, they're letting you know that love is love.
Yes. Right.
So I think that you're like, is this triggering? Well, triggering for a moment and then fucking cathartic when Violet gets to pull that trigger and empty that barrel and then ride off with her lover. I'm like, that's, yeah, that's a feel good.
That was a big feel good.
So I don't know. Sarah, what's your snowflake?
I only gave it 1.5.
One and a half?
Okay. Yeah.
What earned the half? What earned the one? What earned the 1.5?
Okay, so one was definitely gut and asshole, okay? That automatically gets it a snowflake for me. Because that, like,
went into her asshole.
When her gut went into, okay.
It was the torture.
The fingers. All right.
And what was cutting off fingers like that. Oh, God, that made me cringe so bad. And then the homophobia, the way that they tortured, like the killings, it was just very violent.
Kristen?
Yeah, I was thinking 2 was my recommendation for all the same aforementioned reasons. Huh.
What were you going to give it, Justin?
I don't think I was going for any.
None.
Okay.
None. Like, you have liberating sex workers. You have, like, treatment of convicts that is, like, clear and present. You have clear-cut asshole bad guy who's taken care of by people who have the right way of thinking. You have women who get one over on the masculine representation of the mafia, and they win in the end. It seems almost outlandish that. So then we've got to think about what our snowflake ratings are, because am I supposed to be rating it based on what I think other people are triggered about? Or is it legit supposed to be what I am triggered about? Because, I mean, I didn't like when Joey Pants said that queers make him sick. I mean, that hurts me in my heart that people think like that. But then Joey Pants got shot later and they didn't fucking care that he said queers made them sick, because they ended up being like awesomely in love. And what was the difference between the two of them? Not much. They became like bonded. And you saw that strong relationship, how it could overcome someone like Joey Pants saying that queers make him sick. And then you learn in life that just because someone says queers make them sick doesn't mean that you still can't be a happy queer.
So have you judged other movies then?
That's what I'm trying to figure out and think about on our journey.
Because I think that we kind of judged it by like triggers and like...
I think we're right. I think I always end up being like, okay, this is what everyone else rated it. Maybe I'll go with this. Or when I'm thinking about it, or maybe I have honestly been triggered by other movies and I haven't thought about it properly. But that's something I think I've talked about before, is that I want us to think about what our triggers are and how snowflake we actually are.
I think when we point out triggers, we're pointing out triggers that may be pulled out by anyone, not like necessarily by us. Because when I'm watching a movie, like I don't notice a lot of triggers sometimes unless I'm watching the movie for the podcast and then I'm specifically looking for triggers. Like I don't get triggered by things unless they're a trigger for me. But when I'm watching for the podcast, I notice things that could trigger other people. So like when I make my snowflake rating, I'm basing it on like how severe did I think, like for this example would be like how severe like the torture was, like picking up the dead body and like yelling at it, kicking the people while they're like unconscious, like that's kind of severe torture. So I put that pretty high, like that's an intense trigger.
I think that, so I, there are a lot of things that like I listed in the triggers that like Kristen said, like they're not triggers for me, like gang and mafia, like the gangs and the mafia like haven't really affected my life, but they on other people's life. I don't know anyone, like I haven't been completely devastated by a theft like someone was in this movie. But I think that like my hope with the like the snowflake ratings is to kind of help like guide people's decisions for like watching movies. It's like how triggered might somebody be by watching this movie?
Like so a general audience?
Yes.
Like Because like immediately I was like, I would recommend this to people. I wouldn't hesitate to recommend this to people. There's nothing in this movie that I would find embarrassing to recommend to someone, or I think would make somebody uncomfortable. I mean, I guess the only thing technically is that there is a giant sex scene in the middle of it if people are homophobic. But I mean, but I, again, am not triggered by that. And then, but maybe that's still a triggering thing.
Yeah, but I don't know. The thing is, like, that's the thing is, like, because we're podcasting, it's, for me, it's more about, like, okay, so I am not triggered, but I know that there are people in the audience who could be. And I'm not saying that people will react to these movies in a horrible way and be like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm watching this movie. It's horrible and triggering. But, like, there could be somebody in the audience who's like, yes, I am in a relationship with somebody who is abusive to me. And this does make me cry and feel upset because I feel all these feelings by watching this visually in front of me.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that could be very triggering to someone. I mean, there can be triggers in the movie and you still really enjoy the movie. And like in this case, which I did. And then you can also find that there are triggers in the movie and still find that the movie is a valuable piece of art and expression and representation.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd kind of like to hear what any audience members have to say. We do a whole podcast about snowflakes and triggers. And I am just curious about snowflakes and triggers in general. So if any listeners want to pop us an email and give us a thought on what you have to say about being triggered or what maybe's triggered you, then maybe you can help give us some different POVs and things like that. I'm sure that we'll continue the conversation. I don't think that we're planning on stopping anytime soon. Lots of movies coming up.
Uh-huh.
I most definitely would recommend Bound.
I would 100% recommend this movie.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend this movie.
I honestly want to put it out there and say that out of all of the movies that we've been doing, I think that Bound is one that I would be most comfortable recommending to a mass amount of people, knowing mm-hmm. they would enjoy it.
Yes.
I feel that way too, probably, yeah. This movie had triggers in it, but I feel like it was very well executed. And like you say, it's more about the evolving and the changing of the movie.
Well, especially in 2021 where a lesbian relationship is not
it's
triggering at all.
Right.
And in this movie, it just does
become about the plot of the money in the movie.
Yeah, and justice is served where justice is due in this movie. And I think that just makes it like it makes the triggers a lot more palatable if people can like watch through to the end of it.
Oh, totally.
It definitely makes you feel like victorious at the end.
Yes. I have to do that thing where I connected to Buffy and I can't just do it out of my head this time. So I got to work on it. And then listeners, if you care, you have to come find it.
Yeah, come find it on Facebook at Millennial Movie Mix.
And keep up with us on Instagram at Millennial Movie Mix Podcast.
And don't forget to join us next Monday when we go over American Pie from 1999.
Woo!
It is the summer of sex and you can't have sex without an apple pie. All right, listeners, you come back and join us next Monday. We're taking back Mondays and you're coming with us.
That's right.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, snowflakes.
Bye, snowflakes.